question. You're listening to Dynamo's Dozen. With your host, Ian the Dynamo Kelly. Welcome to Dynamo's Dozen, the podcast that I bring you each and every single week where I talk about whatever may be on my mind, from pro wrestling, sports, entertainment, music, movies, muesli, fresh socks and jocks, and everything in between, never forgetting the talc. This is Dynamo's Dozen, and we're going to get straight into it with Alexander Dean.
Welcome back to Dynamo's Dozen. I am here for the third time with the one and the only Mr. Alexander Dean, my friend. This time.
You say it's the third time, but it's the first time these people are hearing it.
Yeah, well, to give a bit of a backstory, we've recorded two.
Yeah.
The first one was too controversial. Second one, file got corrupted from powers unknown, from parts unknown.
So finally we're here. And you know what? We actually have something to talk about this time. Here.
And you want to, we have another guest in the room if you want to just introduce him, because he's here, so he may as well be part of the show.
The esteemed, the amazing, the fantabulous intergalactic time traveller, Professor John Bernard.
What is up? But I will just be a background player here.
Welcome.
There's big topics going on. They're talking big news. And I'm going to let the guys talk away. Boys.
Actually, you're not a professor anymore, aren't you now?
And that's still in flux.
Is it a professor of tokenomics now?
Not quite, no. No, not quite.
No.
A professor of different dimensions. But that's another podcast.
Ufology, is it? That kind of thing. Ufology or something?
Ufology?
Different dimensions and stuff? This is crazy.
Do you know what the study of different dimensions is called? No. You fucking dark horse.
Man,
I don't even know what to study. That's kind of that background.
There is
research.
A study of different dimensions, obviously.
No,
of course.
What I was talking about is John Bernard is presently in the middle of changing characters, you know.
There's a mix-up going on. There's a mix-up.
Why don't you work for NASA?
Why don't I work for NASA? Politics. You know all about that.
Well, there we go. Getting in
hand. Oh, well, there's going to be a lot of political talk here today. Politics are, they go hand in hand with Alexander Dean. But trust me. It's all going to be gravy. There's going to be nothing but love on the show. First of all, actually, one of the things that we did agree on this podcast is that we were going to speak about an event that is upcoming. So I'm going to let you speak about it rather than me talking about it. It's going to be coming up in Trinity College, I believe. It's Jay Money is going to be running the show.
Hosting a party,
Hosting a party. So give us some...
Trinity Brawl 2. Last year we did the inaugural Trinity Brawl. The first of hopefully 50 we'll do over the next 50 years or so. We're going to do it again this year. We wanted to do it on the same date this year, the first weekend of July. We did it on July 6th last year. Some people call it just the July 6th show. And this year there was a bit of a scheduling conflict with Jay Money's real life philanthropy and his other projects. And we've had to do it now on August 16th, and potentially, might be breaking the news here, potentially August 17th, because we're calling it Dublin or Nothing, and we might be doubling our shows this year, you know?
I like that, Dublin or Nothing. I was really impressed with that, yeah. Because, you know, people obviously saw me retweet it as well, and put up a tweet about it, and I thought the Dublin or Nothing was perfect.
Since AEW announced that Dublin or Nothing show name, everyone's kind of wanted to use that Dublin or Nothing name, and
something.
Now's the time, you know. So yeah, August 16th for sure, potentially August 17th. I'm trying to convince them to do August 17th as well, because why not have two shows when you can have two shows? If you have a city centre venue and you can go in and have a lot of fun over 2 days and give more people a platform to perform, why wouldn't you, you know?
And if you don't make the first show, there's a second one to make.
Oh no, you'll make both shows. Yeah. Jesus Christ, it's not hard, it's city centre, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you can't get in,
if you can't get in the door, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
we are in Players Theatre, and we did sell it out within about a day and a half last
year.
So
that's exactly what where I'm coming from. If you don't make it the first night, you're going to make it the second night.
We
you know
think
what I mean?
We can fit more people in this year. We think that we drastically undersold the capacity. Now, it was like Bleeding Sweatbox last year, but as in the atmosphere, we think we can fit more people in this year. So the Eventbrite will be going up shortly. I don't know when this is going to go out, but hopefully it's already up and already sold out. But if it's not, check my Twitter, check J Money's Twitter. I'm at Riley B Dean. J Money is at J Money Worldwide, and
I'm at Dynamo's Dozen. If you want, I will share all the links as well.
I'm at John Bernard Ress.
There you go.
Please follow me. I could do with the followers.
I'm gonna follow you.
Yes, that's one.
I'm gonna follow you. No, but like 100%. Any, you know, I done it for the mags thing as well. Yeah. I'll always share what I can. So 100%.
An interesting stat. I was looking at the last OTT Contender show. We debuted four people on White Collar Wrestling, which was the charity event that we ran in.
J Money was one of them,
and Martin Steers was the other one.
Martin Steers
made their OTT debut on the same day, and both were just shy of 18 months removed from their proper debut, which I think is a pretty good return on investment from White Collar Wrestling.
Yeah, and for anyone that wants to go into the back, backlogs, I was there live at the show.
There you go.
We all had a chat about it.
And that was the moment that I realised J Money was a star. Do you know why? Because Dynamo is conducting a backstage interview with J Money before his debut. Anybody else would be a bit flustered because it's literally just before. I think actually you started the interview as myself, Justy, and Devin West were going to the
ring. That's correct. Yeah.
And you were trying to catch J Money's thoughts just before he made his... No, sorry. It was just before the attempt at a singles match between J Money and Justy.
It was. Yeah.
You caught up with J Money. You asked him, how are you feeling ahead of your first match? J Money, completely suave as anything, gives you a few sound bites, and then he stops himself in the middle of his own interview and says, wait a second, listen to this pop. You hear the first bars of J Money's music, the crowd erupts, and he goes, there's no better feeling, I'll be back in a second. And he went out for his very first appearance in a professional wrestling scenario after doing that. And when I heard that back on your podcast, I thought, Jesus, this kid's a star.
And you know, the funny thing is, just from my perspective as well, it was beautiful because I remember watching him. Because like he literally does it, he goes, wait. Because before that, he was literally standing there, just kind of in his own world, getting ready.
Yeah.
And then, boom, turned it on. And I went, this guy is fucking literally money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Comes back, and then I think he had a little bit of a chat later when he came back after the match. I was asking him how that went, and he was just like, yeah, it was absolutely incredible.
It was fun.
So J Money is money.
Yes, he is indeed.
He is money. So I guess getting off all the plugs, onto yourself, my friend. It's been... This is going to be a good chat, actually, because we don't need any kind of questions. We don't need any, you know, back talk in terms of what we've done before, what you did before. This is about the here and now. You returned to the ring roughly about a year and a half ago.
For myself, maybe about 2 years ago now.
2 years.
A tag team match in Kildare, just as a space filler on a card.
Yeah.
And that was on the Beano Mania show in 2017. That was my first match back.
Yeah, and that was after maybe, what, 5-6 years?
4 years from my last match.
Okay.
I had my last match in my first run, pre-casket match back injury, we'll call it. I had my last match of that run in the August of 2013 at a Comic-Con.
Okay.
Wrestled Captain Deadbones Dawkins.
Oh, nice.
Rest in peace, Gav. He's not actually dead.
No, he's his gimmick is though. It's safe to say that.
So he was a good kid though. He was really good.
Very nice guy. Very nice guy. But you see, I'm on the fly here. And fairness, I didn't get the years out of.
That was good.
Yeah. But most importantly, like you've been back. For me, I was very happy to see you back.
Thank you.
It was always something that was in you, regardless. Do you know what I mean? It's that bug, isn't it? It's the drug. It's there. It's never going away.
I kind of distracted myself with a few things for a few years. I did a bit of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
I, you know, went back to college. I, you know, set up my own kind of personal training business. I did a few different things for a few years. Now, obviously, I still have, you know, the the business.
Actually. Well, the business is still going well. Let's talk about that.
No, let's not talk about that.
We can plug it later.
No, let's not plug it at all. It's Grant. I'm a personal trainer. That's fine. If you want to get trained by me, just DM me or something like that. But I don't talk about personal training. Like,
you want to get trained by him. Nah. But anyway, go on.
But yeah, I did a few different things for a while. And just wrestling crept back in.
Yeah.
I ended up... There was just a few different scenarios that kind of pointed me back in the direction of pro wrestling. And at the start of 2017, I just kind of took the plunge again. And I said, you know, F it, let's do it, you know.
And it's kind of funny because that was around the time that we actually started getting back in contact. We hadn't, not that we lost contact, but we hadn't been in contact for maybe a year or so.
Yeah, yeah. We'd always... my thing was I kind of shut myself off from social media for a good while.
Yeah.
And I deleted a lot of things like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that. I just didn't want to be one of those social media guys unless I had to. And then when I slowly started adding that stuff back in, all I seen was all these Irish wrestlers talking about how good the scene was and how well they were doing. And you know, people like Martina were getting booked everywhere, flying all over the shop, wrestling in the UK and in Europe and stuff like that. And it looked like the scene was really thriving. So that kind of made me, that kind of piqued my interest. I at that stage, I'd never been to, you know, an OTT show, or I'd kind of seen how well like the likes of ICW over in Scotland was doing with the Hydro shows and the SECC and stuff like that, but I was only vaguely aware of what was going on, you know. Obviously I knew like people like that would have been around back in the day, like Noam and lads like that were getting signed up to contracts, and right around the same time as I started back on social media, I noticed that obviously Martina was going all over the shop, and I noticed as well that Jordan was doing the UK tournaments. And I was like, wow, okay, so wrestling's going pretty well for some people.
Yeah, it wasn't
a thing as well where if it wasn't going well, I wouldn't have ended up back. I still do have the passion for it. Like, it's still wrestling, like, you know, gym shows, or it's still wrestling gah halls, if given the chance. I'm not just one of these fair weather guys. But
I got you.
But at the same time, when it's going well, you're obviously, your interest is peaked, you know?
Of course.
Yeah, so...
And, I mean, like... Speaking of ICW, I mean, most recently, tragically, obviously, Lionheart passed away.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to get into that, but one of the great things about it was that you actually had pretty much his last match.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, we can make that sound like it's a great thing, but it's not a great thing at the same time.
It was very heavy for me for a few weeks.
Yeah, and that's obviously something that we haven't even spoke about. Personally, we've been hanging around each other for the last few hours, and it's something I wasn't going to bring up. But just that you mentioned it there, because I didn't know Lionheart that well.
Yeah.
Met him once.
Yeah.
Really nice guy. I knew you wanted to work him.
Yeah.
And how was that for you? I mean, it was obviously a mixed bag of emotions.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I'll talk you through it.
Yeah.
So, I... was fortunate enough to win the UEWA Heavyweight Championship in May of this year.
That was in Belgium, right?
No, that was in Norway.
Okay, sorry. They're all the same. Do you know what I mean? Scandinavian.
Very different, but okay.
I'm only joking. Sorry, guys.
But no sooner had I gotten out of the ring in Norway and posted up a picture online of the title than Lionheart Adrian DM'd me and said... let's have a title versus title match. And I said, all right, okay, because I've wanted to wrestle him for a good while. I've known Adrian since the first time I went to Scotland, which I think was 2007.
Yeah, you went over there quite a lot with Jordan even back in the day.
Jordan, before even Jordan, Gary Cassidy.
You got him over there.
Jordan.
It's a little known story.
Yeah, but that sounds like I told you to say that, so.
No, I know this. I know this as fact, and you know that.
To be fair, Jordan was attracting some interest from some promoters already because he was putting videos online, and it was a thing where people said to me, do you know Jordan? And I was like, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. And then they were like, how do you feel about tagging him? Because this is when Gary Cassidy had jacked in the wrestling, and we were looking for a new tag team partner because they thought I worked really well as a tag team guy. So we were doing like basic foreign heels. So anyway, so the first time, sorry, going back to where we were, the first time I went over to Scotland, it was actually Adrian that picked up me and Gary from the airport, and we stayed in his house. And over the years, he kind of became who he became, which was like one of the top guys in Scotland and one of the top guys for a period of time in the UK, places like PCW, 1PW, you know, he was a big deal in a lot of those places.
Yeah, for sure. Worked with obviously the famous match with AJ.
Yeah.
He broke his neck and made a big comeback.
Yeah, yeah. He thought he was done after that.
He did. Everyone thought he was done, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, haven't known him that long and haven't seen what he became, and knowing the style of wrestling that he does, I always thought that myself and himself would have a good match or a good series of matches, you know. But it just never worked out. Like I said, I was a tag team guy when I first went over there. He was kind of like the upper mid card guy being groomed for like the next top spot. Then he was the top guy, and I was at the start of my singles run, I was the opening match kind of heel, you know. And then he was a heavyweight, I was a cruiserweight, you know. And you know, even though there's not that much size difference between the two of us.
Yeah, because
just it was a perception.
Like,
you know?
He wasn't the biggest of guys in the world. Like, you know, pretty much the same size.
Oh, fuck, I got 17 stone at one station.
He was tall, though. 6'2".
Yeah, 6'1", 6'2". But he got 17 stone at one stage. He was pretty big during that heavyweight title run.
But I mean, what I mean is that he never looked like a you know what I mean?
He was never Brody Steele.
It's kind of like the Okada thing. Okada doesn't look like he's big, but then he's deceivingly big when you stand beside him. Yeah, I got you.
Big cat, Leonard. But anyway, so it was one of those things where I always kind of wanted to have that match, because it was one match that kind of
got away from you.
So I ended up going to a seminar that he was running in Belfast, December 2017, and training with him. And it was the first time that we'd actually ever done anything in the ring, because we were never in the same match at all, not even in the tag.
So the first time you even kind of worked in the ring together?
Yeah, okay. Well, this is December 2017, and like I remember coming out of that seminar, and he did a little bit of work with me in the seminar, because I was someone that he knew. And he trusted, like, to do a little bit with. And I was just demonstrating a few spots and punches and stuff like that. And it was fine. And I remember there was a little bit of chemistry. And after that, I said to him, like, look, if there's ever a chance, let's try and get into the ring. So, sure enough, May 2019, he pitches to ICW, to Mark Dallas. He said, bring this guy in. We'll do a title versus title match. I think he's worth a shot on ICW in the future.
Wow.
And he showed me the messages that he sent to the guys who run ICW, Mark Dallas, and to Scott Reed and guys like that. And I was really appreciative of it.
And this is the most recent?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew as well that this was my chance. So we had 3 weeks, and I said, well, how do you wanna build this? And he's like, oh, let's just make it personal as fuck. And let's just absolutely slate each other. And his one thing was, he said, just don't say anything that'll get me heat with my girlfriend. You know, whether it's like, you know, you don't say something like, oh, I see you eyeing up girls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, it wasn't true.
It's like something I'd ask you, not that, you know what I mean? Exactly. I got you.
So, over the course of about 4 promos, we absolutely tore shreds out of each other. I knew that I had to open a game, so I contacted a videographer that I knew who could edit it together with a good music and with a decent quality camera and stuff. And we absolutely ripped shreds out of each other. And I remember it was before, the night before the match, or 2 days before the match, that I got a message from Mark Dallas saying, like, you've done a great job. The two of you have done a great job making this an actually anticipated match. And I read, like, Twitter, and people were really looking forward to the match.
So obviously money was going up.
Exactly.
Yep.
As people were looking forward to the match as, like, you know, a proper feud match for Adrian, not just, he was doing a series of exhibition matches as, like, he wants to prove that he's world class, so he's bringing in all these guys like Erie from
the old Ric Flair syndrome. We're bringing guys from different territories and stuff like that. You made it like a personal thing for him, rather than an exhibition. Like, that's a perfect word.
Yeah, so it wasn't an exhibition match. There was a bit of heat behind it, a bit of a feud going there. So anyway, the Sunday came, we had the match. It went very well. If you want to check it out, it's on ICW On Demand. It's one of the Fight Club episodes.
And also, guys, if anyone wants to check out some of the promos, like, on your Instagram, some of them are still there.
They're all still there on my IGTV, and I think they were shared by ICW as well. So
you want to shout out your Instagram handle there?
@RatherbyDean, same as my Twitter.
They're well worth the look, guys. I mean, if you want to talk about old school promos, I only said this to Dean earlier, one of the first things I said to him when we got in the car, it's a proper throwback to old school promos, and it's really good. I well recommend looking at the backstory and looking at those promos before you look at the match.
Appreciate
for
it.
For me personally, that's what I done, and it was, I loved it. Yeah.
Cheers. So yeah, anyway, the Sunday came. We had the match. There was really good reactions from the crowd. Really good reactions from everyone backstage. And funny story, you probably, this might never go online. But what was cut from the episode of Fight Club, because obviously what happened, which we'll get into now in a second. But after the match, I get backstage and I'm a bit like, right, I knew the match was good, but I didn't know if it was ICW main event good. And sorry, that was another thing. Like they had me main event in the first show I was there, which was a lot of pressure, you know. And ICW has ran more professionally than any promotion I've ever worked for before. They've got an absolute wall of monitors backstage. Sure. They've got a live director. They've got live commentary. They've got everything. Everything kind of edited straight to tape. So
yeah, sure. I mean, that was one of Fergal's favorite spots to work before he went to the Fed. Like,
so, for good reason. Yeah. They're ran so well, well. So we get backstage, and I'm kind of saying to Mark Dallas, like, "Are you happy with how that went?" He's like, "Oh yeah, mate. Oh yeah, perfect." And he starts. Straight away, he starts telling me, like, I want to bring you in this time, I want to bring you this. Because up until this point, there was no real, like, you're going to come in again. It was just like,
you knew this was your opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Both hands job. It had to be.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's basically saying, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to bring you in July. We're going to bring you in August. We're going to do this after that. We're going to do that. And, like, just as I'm shaking his hand, a guy called Coach Tripp, who's also the warden, who's previously Adam Shane. So there's a lot of characters there. He comes up to me and he says, you better get back out there. And I look and I was like, what? And I look at the monitor backstage and Adrian is sitting down in the middle of the ring. And I said, what's he doing? And he goes, he just called you out. I said, oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah.
What's going on there? So with a bit of trepidation, still kind of selling the frog splash and stuff, I don't know how to react. And I walk out the curtain and I didn't know what was going on because we hadn't spoke about this beforehand. This was just
on the fly.
This was kind of on the fly, yeah. And he grabs the microphone and he during the promos in the build up to the match, I said the title versus title match was basically his ticket out of Scotland, his way of proving that he wasn't just a big deal in one territory, you know. If he could win the European heavyweight title, it was his way of getting out, you know. And he quoted that. And he said, look, you said this was my ticket out, and he beat me for the belt. He said, you said this is my ticket out of Scotland. He said, as far as I'm concerned, that match was your ticket in. And then he just steps out of the ring, she ushers me in and hands me a microphone. And I couldn't believe it, man. I couldn't believe it. So there I am, stood in the garage in Glasgow after main eventing an ICW show in a title versus title match, and the champ, the guy who's like the top guy in this promotion, has just handed me like a heel that's just been brought in as his first match. He's handed me the microphone and basically said, close that show and send them home happy. And to be honest with you, I was bull tick because I thought immediately as soon as I started talking, I thought I was getting all these babyface reactions. So I kind of just said to them, like, I just told them the truth, the crowd. I just said, this isn't my first time in ICW. I said, I've been here before. I don't know if anyone remembers, but I used to wrestle under the name Sean South. And a few people, so they obviously have, you know, long memories. They aren't all raging alcoholics in the ICW crowd.
Well, they are, but there's a bit of memory. We'll get to that in a second. They're Celtic brothers and sisters.
I basically said, look, all I ever wanted in this promotion was a platform. Because that's all I do want. In any promotion that I work for, I just want a platform to do what I do, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's Fight Factory or whether it's Phoenix or whether it's, you know, ICW, or if I eventually ever get to work for somewhere like Progress, you know, that's all I want. It's a platform to perform, to do what I like, you know, to do what I love. And so I just basically told them the truth. All I ever wanted was a platform. All I ever wanted was, you know, every time I step in the ring, that they were entertained by what I did, whether they loved me or they hate me, you know. And I'm vaguely aware that I'm turning babyface here as I'm saying this, and I was like, fuck, okay, I have to bring this back somehow. But then I had to also get in the fact that I wanted to come back. So I said, and I said, if you agree with Lionheart, and you think I've just got my ticket into ICW, you make sure the fuckers back there, talking about Dallas and, you know, all the guys that booked around, you make sure they know about it, because they hear every time you want a guy brought in, that got a good reaction. Said, okay, I'm on somewhere, you're brilliant, they like me. Fuck,
so it's really good, like, off the cuff work here, you know.
I mean
thought,
I'd like to see it back. I probably mumbled about half of it, but
well, look, that's par for the course though, but like, so continue, sorry. It's really interesting hearing you kind of revisit that in your own mind and you haven't seen it.
So anyway, yeah, I said all this, and I was talking about, I basically wanted to kind of gimmick my way back in. And then I said, fuck, I have to get brought back as a heel, though. I can't be a babyface here. So I said, I finished it off by saying, but if you ever give me a reaction like you did tonight, I will go through every single fucking one of you for a shortcut, you alcoholic Glaswegian bastards. And that got the biggest pop of all. They're like, Ray, give us hell. And I was like, ah, fuck, I can't win. So I just dropped the microphone and walked out. But it did its job. It closed the show on the kind of note that they want to close their shows on. And then I walked backstage, and one of my really, really good friends in wrestling, Andy Wilde, was standing there. And, like, he's my best mate in wrestling that I never get to see, you know, because we'd send each other WhatsApp voice recordings almost every day. Just talk about, shooting the shit about training, about shows, about his family, about my work, about anything and everything, you know. He's a real top bloke. He's a legit best mate. Even though I hadn't seen him for 6 years at this point, and he's just standing there beaming, and I look at Dallas, and Dallas is beaming, and I look at Adrian, and Adrian's beaming, and we all stood there, and we got into, it's probably up on my, it is on my Instagram, there's a picture of me, Andy, and Adrian all standing there after the match, and it was a really nice moment.
Yeah.
And that was that. We all went for food afterwards. Everything seemed really, really normal. Everything was just spot on, you know. And As I said, everyone was happy, and I was very happy. And I remember the night before he died, Adrian actually texted me and just said, have you had those dates confirmed that Dallas was talking to you about?
Well.
And
and
I said, no, not just yet. And he said, right, we'll stay on them. And he sent me a screenshot of a message that he'd sent to one of the guys, saying, look, just make sure you don't drop the ball with him, because I think he's done really well here. And then he asked me, this is why I at first had a hard time comprehending what happened. He asked me about the promotions that were involved in the UEWA, and I said, all right, I'll send you on the members email list.
Yeah.
Just now. And I did, and he's like, oh, cheers, mate, appreciate it. And he said, looking forward to seeing you, you know, next time you're over. I was like, yeah, likewise, man, likewise. And then that was that. I was kind of in work, so they were all kind of short text messages, and sometimes I'd still look at the conversation and I'd be a bit like, oh, should I give him a bit more time?
That's never. It's always the way, dude.
Yeah.
It's always the way.
If you knew that, like, there was one of the lads.
Like, I'm actually getting a little bit upset for you now. You know what I mean? It's you know, it's mental health, man, is something I try and promoting the show in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's you don't know what people are going through, you know?
One thing that's kind of come out of it that's been really, really positive is that a lot of the lads in Scotland, at least, are making much more of an effort to, I don't want to say be friends with each other, because that's always been the way, but
yeah,
to go in deep with each other, to kind of say, like, well, how are you feeling, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I believe, as a result as well, ICW have made it possible for any of the lads who feels that they need to speak to someone if they ever feel that way, you know, which is a super positive step. Andy Wilde himself was obviously very upset, because we were all out for dinner that night. There was no signs that something was wrong with Adrian, you know. He was himself. Which obviously we haven't really spoken about Adrian. Like, he's a very jovial, very funny person.
Yeah. Typical kind of Scottish boy that wants to have banter, and yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, a prick of the highest order, and it's everyone said this since what happened. Like, you can say you love them, and
but that's like Erbane, though.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Erbane, like, you know, he obviously had the accident.
Yeah.
But everyone listening to this knows that Bean was an absolute cunt.
Oh, yeah.
But he was our cunt. Yeah. And he'd let you know that you were a cunt. He didn't many people. Yeah, yeah. But if you made Bean's list, that meant you were relevant in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. You'd rather be on, attention to it, yeah.
You'd rather be on the list. Me and you never left. I think I left once.
No,
I was okay. You never left that list. I remember saying, if I beat Southie once, if I beat Southie once, and I'm off the list, and he said that to me in Kildare one time, and again, he was like, no, you made it off the list.
Paul Bean, who left us about 5 years ago, 6 years ago maybe now.
Yeah.
He had a list of people that he said he absolutely despised and would love to see hit by a bus. And yeah. I was always on that list. Mm. And the thing is, I don't know why, because we started off, when I first met him, we got on great.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I was just on the list, and people kind of made their way on and off the list every now and again. And same as with, not same as with Adrian, but Bean was a prick of the highest order.
Mm.
But he was... You loved him for, you know, he was our prick. And with Adrian, it was the same way. He was a very funny lad, but I think that Dallas said it best. You can look this up on YouTube. Mark Dallas gave a speech at the memorial show that ICW did for him. He said that one of the first times he met Adrian, he walked past him down the street, and Adrian kind of looked him up and down and just looked at him like he was shy. And Dallas went, "What a fucking prick." I remember the first time me and
I know the kind of look you're talking about too, but like, look at this fucking...
Look at this jobber.
Jabroni.
Yeah. The first time myself and Gary Cassidy, when we went over to Scotland, like I said, he picked us up from the airport, and, you know, he let us stay in his house and stuff like that. The first time we met him, we were coming back from the trip, and to give you a bit of context here, we walked into the airport, and for anyone that didn't know Lionheart, like, at the time he was like 6'1", probably weighed about 11 stones soaking wet, always walked around in a leather jacket and a pair of Lonsdale runners and a pair of jeans, but for all intents and purposes, he thought he was The Rock, you know?
He
was as cool as The Rock, and you'd go up, you'd say hello to him, and you do the whole...
And that was his guy, right?
Yeah, he loved The Rock. He loved Van Damme and all these guys as well.
Yeah.
But you went up and you'd be like, "Oh, hey, how's it going? I'm Dean, nice to meet you." And he'd just give you some strange as fuck kind of a comeback, like, "All right, Shagger, how are you?" And all that stuff, you know. "All right, my man, yeah, well." And, you know, he'd stride out. Like, he'd never walk beside you. He'd walk like 5 feet in front of you, kind of like... talking back over his shoulder, and that was the thing. Like, you could hate all these things about a person, but as a character, you know, he was a walking...
It's a UK thing, though. I mean, I remember, and I mean, a lot of the boys listening to this will vouch for it. When we went over to Hammerlock, you know, my guy that I wanted to impress most was John Ryan, not John Moss.
Yeah,
believe it or not.
Yeah. And John Ryan was the top guy over there.
Yeah, John Ryan was the guy that I wanted to impress. And man, I had to work hard to impress that motherfucker. And the only time... And I remember Paddy Morrow will... No, it wasn't Paddy Morrow. Richie Quinn will vouch for this. Richie Quinn, Becky's brother, you know, superstar Becky, that is, will vouch for this one. I was... One day we were doing leg drops.
Yeah.
We were just on a crash mat, doing leg drops. And I'd done the short leg drop, you know, because I didn't like that big... jump.
Hulk Hogan style. Yeah,
because I figured I'm short, so like a lower center of gravity, a nice little sharp snap.
Friend doesn't know, a short leg drop is more like Chris Benoit, Bret Hart would do.
Sure.
And another leg drop that would be like the Hulk Hogan leap into the air kind of job.
Yeah, like the tall guys would do. Yeah. Kind of make more impact. Yeah. Whereas it'd be impactful for a smaller guy to do it, just and then go for the pin. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because you're trying to win the money. You want to get the pin quick. So I do the short leg drop on him, and John Ryan goes, "Oh!" And I mean, he sells it like a champ.
Mm.
And I think I've hurt him. I'm like, "Oh, fuck, he worked me into thinking I hurt him." And he went, "That's it. That's great, mate." And he goes, "That's how you do it." And I remember walking away going,
"Oh, clever."
From scared to like going, "Oh, shit, I've just hurt my coach." Going, "Oh, that's how you do it, yeah." And I remember at that moment, that's at the bar. That's when he started actually buying me drinks and having drinks with me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's always weird that there's that one moment that you're trying to kind of get somebody's attention in a lot of ways. And sometimes by not trying too hard, that's how you get it. Do you know what I mean? I think if you're trying too hard, they know. These guys that are more experienced know. I mean, I'm sure Adrian knew that with you as well. He wants to talk to me. But
it wasn't necessarily like that. I wanted to work him, you know what I mean? But I always seen him as a peer.
But he probably knew that, though. Room,
you know what
he
mean?
Probably
but
knew
yeah,
that,
yeah, definitely.
But
definitely.
That's what I'm saying. So it's kind of a thing where these guys that maybe are a little bit more experienced know, but they're kind of making you work for it.
Yeah.
Do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I'd say if he hadn't wanted to pull the string and have us wrestle in 2009 or 2010 in Scotland, he could have done it, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
It was just, it took all that time. And I'm really glad it took all that time because
the timing, though.
That time was terrible, to be honest with you. Like,
it's great, it's great, and it's terrible.
It's not great. To go back to what we were talking about, like I said, he was texting me on the Tuesday night, and then obviously the Wednesday afternoon, I got a phone call from Andy Wilds just to tell me what had happened, you know. And Adrian was actually scheduled to wrestle Wolfgang on Chugs, which is
okay.
the event that I just did. There for ICW
on the Wednesday?
No, I just did that there on Sunday gone.
Okay.
So on the Wednesday was when he died, but he was his next big match with ICW was scheduled for July 28th, you know. And I felt there was a really weird, and I almost feel guilty for feeling this way, because it's strange to think of how something like this affects you, you know. So something like this affects myself. It's strange to be that selfish, I think, but in a way I was kind of thinking, Jesus, I shouldn't have been Adrian's last match, you know, me, you know, of all people. It for someone like Wolfgang, who he's been best mates with for years, like, if there had to be a last match, and obviously you want the circumstances of the last match to be when you're 45 and you've decided to hang it up under your own terms, you know.
That's the dream, though.
Yeah.
You know?
But you want it to be someone like Wolfgang that he has a deep bond with, not some lad that he kind of knew a while back and then got back in the scene. And there was a weird kind of weight on me when people would say things like, oh, you were his last match, or when one of his last tweets he mentioned me in, and you'd see over the course of the week or so after he died where people were obviously going to his Twitter page and scrolling through his previous tweets, and they find the tweet that he mentions me in, and they like it or they retweet it, and you know why they found it, because it was a fairly innocuous tweet, you know.
Well, I did that.
Yeah, but it was one of those things where, like, as you're getting notifications on this thing, just to say like, oh, somebody liked the tweet you're mentioning, like, you know exactly how they found that, and you're going, oh, and it's a weird. There was a weird kind of sense of, the word I keep using is like, weight or heaviness or responsibility in being that last match, you know.
Yeah.
And even when the match went out on ICW On Demand, I was very nervous about watching it, because if I misremembered it as being good and it was a stinker, I was gonna feel very guilty for having his last match be a stinker, you know, because he wouldn't deserve that, you know. But these are all really irrational.
Do you mind if I chime in there, though, a little bit? Because I can tell that you're obviously getting emotional about it as well, if you don't mind. I look at it in a different way, obviously, because I'm not the one in the situation. I look at it as a point of, like, you know, instead of Wolfgang being his last match, it was him doing his kind of, almost, in his mind, I don't know him as well as you do, but, you know, it sounds like that. He loved the wrestling business. It's almost him doing his due diligence and getting a new guy over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That sounds like more. But by all accounts of hearing,
I don't. Yeah. There was thoughts like that crossed my mind.
No, but you shouldn't think that way.
No. You know? I know what you're saying. And there was thoughts in my mind of, especially when he texted me the night before and said, have you got those dates confirmed? There was thoughts in my mind where I thought, was this something that he felt like he wanted or had to do?
He knew.
Yeah,
man.
Then again, the way I look at it is, there was far more things in his mind than wrestling.
But the people that I've done some, I mean, on an amateur level, I've done some digging into how, I remember, like, Keith Flint, you know what I mean? There's a picture of Keith Flint actually running on the day that he died with a smile on his face. And I proper looked into this, like, people that are going to do that, no. they know and they plan it well
in advance. A lot of people have said that as well.
They know in advance and they're happy with it. They've accepted it.
Yeah.
But they want to leave on the right terms.
Yeah,
instead of it leaving, in doing it in a dark way.
Yeah.
You know, like Chris Benoit or something. You know, something horrible like that. It's not always like that. A lot of it in their minds is like they've accepted it. They've went, this is it. Like, this is the time. This is the time frame. And they accept it. And I proper looked into that. And it's kind of scary, actually, when you look into that. Do you know what I mean? You're kind of going, whoa. Wow, what, how does that... You can never, ever, understand it.
No, I think I can understand it. And it's a sense of, I would assume, that if you're living under a dark cloud and you perceive that to be the solution, shall we say,
okay,
knowing that there is a relent in that dark cloud is probably a very uplifting feeling. And I can imagine that's how the whole Keith Flint running with a smile on his face.
Sure. About, you know? No different to someone, say, that's in financial trouble and... You know, they're under their cloud for a while and they get that loan and all of a sudden,
yeah.
You know, everything's fine.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, I can see it. The human brain is so fucking...
so complex. Yeah.
It's so complex. Yeah. But I mean, it's a nice story and it's a horrible story. It's nice to hear from you in the sense of you talking about it so openly, but it's also a horrible story. But I think the main kind of thing to kind of gain from this is that, like, literally everybody, you know, wrestling used to be a thing, and this goes for wrestling, this goes for football, this goes for anything, you know, if you're in locker rooms or if you're in groups, just ask each other how you are, you know what I mean. And just keep an eye on each other,
because that's actually one thing that, as I said, came about from as I was gonna say a second ago, Andy Wilde actually found something online in the kind of the aftermath, which they're getting quite closely linked with ICW now, called Andy's Man's Club.
Okay.
Now, or Andy's Men's Club, I apologise. No relation at all to Andy Wilde. It's a group of guys who lost a friend to suicide, who wanted to organise groups around the country, chapters, shall we say, where men who were feeling a bit blue or whatever could go and talk about their feelings in a non-judgmental environment.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if there's an Irish equivalent, but they're all over the UK, and they're linking in with ICW to help to raise their profile, obviously based on what's happened with Adrian. And I think ideas like that need to spread, because it doesn't take an awful lot.
It really doesn't.
You don't necessarily need an organised meeting place, like a scout hall, or something like that, for these things to take place. Like, there's three of us in this room right now, three lads in a Hoover, and we can all talk about our feelings if somebody felt the need to vent about something, or if they were feeling a bit down and those kind of thoughts are coming into their head. And that's one thing that is kind of in the aftermath of what's happened, I've tried to make a conscious effort to do as well, is to talk to my friends and ask if there was anything that I could do, or if there's anything they want to talk about. And because it's one of those things where when it happens in your circle of friends or in your peer group once, you don't want it to happen again.
No.
At all. No. And to be fair, like, a lot of people in the immediate aftermath and in the weeks after have reached out and inquired about how my headspace was about the whole thing. You know, a lot of people...
And that's something I'm ashamed to say, that I did get in touch with you, but I didn't get in touch with you about that.
Yeah.
Purely because
that's okay though.
I thought you know I'm always here.
Yeah.
Vice versa. Yeah. You've been one of my best friends for Jesus 14 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I know, but you're 100% right though. It's one of those things where, like, you know that you've got friends that might be a little bit, you know, suffering with thoughts or suffering with bad times in general, and you kind of never think to kind of reach out until it's too late.
But that's the thing. It's
always going to be that way, though.
You will reach out to somebody and you will say, "I'm here if you need to talk." But the issue is that men in particular will say, "No, I'm grand."
Especially in Ireland and the UK and in Scotland, it's a very... I think it's very unique. Like, people think that, you know, Ireland and the UK are different. We're very, very similar.
Very similar.
In a lot
similar
of ways.
Very similar culture.
Like, yeah, I'm fine. Everything's grand. Because It's and one
but
thing.
It's seen as not manly to open up and say that you need help or you need to talk about your feelings.
I've had to do that before in the past, man. When you go and you sit down with someone, especially if it's, you know, like a father type figure or someone that, you know, for me, without mentioning names, you know, I mentioned to you in the car earlier, I had to do that to someone that I considered a messiah in a lot of ways. And that was one of the hardest things in the world. And the first thing he did was come over and sit beside me and just go, dude, talk.
Yeah.
Just talk.
Yeah.
Here's a cup of tea. Just talk. I'm here to listen. And it's, man, it's, and it when it happens, it's one of the most, what's the word?
Liberating, is it?
Yeah, liberating feelings. Exactly. When you, because you have these pre-judgments in your head of what it's going to go like, because you're planning it. Do you know what I mean? And then when it goes a different way and you're like, oh, it's gone the way I wanted.
Well, I think everyone thinks that someone's going to react negatively and see them as a weaker person for opening up about their feelings, but it's not the case at all.
No.
I've never, ever had somebody say, open up to me about what they were feeling and think, what a pussy, you know?
Well, I can say that as a fact. I've opened up to you many times over the years and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's never been, never been the case.
Yeah.
Even with alcohol involved. Even with alcohol involved.
Yeah, when you're trying to kiss me, it's a bit weird. No, it's not. It's all right.
He always tries to kiss me. That's the funny thing about it. You know what I mean? But I don't blame him.
In the same 4 weeks, I just want to... Just in
and I'm sorry. I am glad that we're kind of... I know this is about you and, you know, what's happening with wrestling. I never
got... more important than wrestling.
Yeah, I was just going to say, because I never got to obviously do like a tribute to, you know, Lionheart, Adrian McCallum on this show. I didn't feel that I had the right to be the one to do a tribute show. However, I think this is the right time and the right place to have a conversation about it. And I do think it's more important than talking about what match you had and what like, because it's important. I mean, how long have you been in? We'll bring himself in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Kieran, you've been wrestling training how long now?
Just over 2 years.
Okay.
Just over 2 years. Alexander Dean literally had that return match he mentioned, I think, less than a month after I started training.
Yeah, and I mean, when you came in to, say, the training facility, I guess, and when you came in, what was your first kind of thoughts inside your head in terms of did you feel welcomed? Did you feel intimidated? Obviously, you felt anxious when you go in, because that's just a natural thing. Like, when you go into a football team and there's a group of guys, you feel it's a natural anxiousness you have, but did you feel that it was a good environment to be around, or
I joined on a massive open day for Fight Factory Pro Wrestling, their first open day in Dublin, and there was 50 people there, and it was an absolute sweatbox, and it was an amazing day, and I've been addicted ever since. But what I have seen since then is the familial atmosphere, and I know people talk about this, and if you're not involved in the wrestling business, it's really hard to kind of equate the closeness that we all have with each other.
For sure, yeah.
Like, I have great friends, and I have, like, my wrestling friends, but I almost feel a lot closer to my wrestling friends because maybe it's just an inherent trust that we have to have with each other. But you spend an awful lot of time with these people in between, not just training. You're traveling with these guys. You're spending overnight with them. I see my wrestling friends an awful lot more than I see my regular friends day to day.
Do you find, just a quick question, sorry. Do you find, you've done jiu-jitsu as well, right?
Yeah.
Do you find there's a similar level of bond that develops as quickly in jiu-jitsu as there is in wrestling? Because I found that, and I think...
I heard this, actually.
A lot
of
it has to do with, in wrestling... You pick me up over your head and you slam me, and I have to trust you not to kill me. Yeah.
Trust.
And in jiu-jitsu, I get a Ezekiel choke on you, and you have to trust me that when you tap my arm, if I've got you, that I'm not just going to hold on and kill you.
Yeah.
So I find that it's like a closeness thing. And there is also something to be said about, you know, if you're that close physically to somebody, you do develop a bond with them.
Well, of course. Well, I'll give an example. The only time me and you got to work in the ring, it was a bit of a cluster. It should have been a better match. 100%.
Oh, yeah.
But I remember, I'll never forget what you'd done for me in that. And I'll always remember this. it was meant to be a jobber match. It was meant to be you. I was kind of coming back in, doing a bit of thing. I got myself in a little bit of shape again. And you said, no, fuck what they say. You're going to have a match with me. I'm not just squashing you. I can't do that. And you said that to me because you had respect for me and for what I was able to do. And there was only one little thing which was funny about it, because we did actually have a decent... It was a decent match bar at one spot. I got on top rope to do a dropkick. Missile dropkick. And whatever way the tape was... you know when you're wearing...
That ring was a death trap.
It was. And whatever, and I knew this. And it wasn't making excuses. I bet myself up about it for weeks after. But because I didn't wear wrestling boots, I wore the... You know, the amateur boots. The rope, like the tape wasn't attached to the rope underneath, so the tape would flip. So like you could slip, do you know what I mean? You could slip off it. So when I went to get the jump to do like the front, because I'd done the front missile dropkick, bump down, do the dynamite kick, flip back up. And I'll never forget, one foot caught him on the left shoulder. It was the most stupid looking thing I've ever seen. And he took the bump for it. Like, and I remember going, fucker, he shouldn't have taken the bump. And I remember you going, shouldn't have taken the bump. I was like, I know. I'm sorry, sorry. I was apologising to you. But it was literally just one of those things where I couldn't really control. You know what I mean? And but I'll never forget that. And this is, the point I'm making is, it's the trust and the respect. If that had been just some other lad, like, you'd have been like, I'm not bumping for that. Yeah, I know you wouldn't have. Do you know what I mean? But you took it, and you tried to fucking help the match. And that goes back to what we were saying about the trust and the bond. We've had a trust and a bond for years. Look, I haven't been in the wrestling business for, you know, I think my last match was 2000 and...
probably, wasn't it?
2010.
Was it?
So, I mean, you're talking about 9 years. Mm. 9 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are still. Nice. You know what I mean? Like, and what you say there, you were open. Like, I can walk into the Fight Factory tomorrow and still be able to have conversations with guys and still be, you know, respected for what I had done before. But not even about that. The bond that we had before. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, shoot the shit about old times.
Yeah, you're one of the stone cutters, yeah?
No, and it's not even about that. I know we used to shoot the shit about that, but, like, it's not even about that for me. For me, it's about, like, I love seeing... where it is now, and I love hearing, you know, like to yourself, you're in it 2 years, but like, I love hearing that it's still that way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
I really, really do.
It never won't be that way. Like, it's never, I just think by the very nature of what we physically do, it will never not produce those kind of bonds.
No, and I'm glad you said that about jiu-jitsu, because it was the same with football. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I played football with a lot of people, and you have that little thing, and it's like, you know.
I'd say it's more like if you're in a band with somebody.
More a band.
Like if you're the drummer and I'm the bassist, you know what I mean? And we have to put a rhythm together, and we have to sync in, and we're like, there's a lot of
like. You're making there. It's like making babies, man. You're making music together.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's something that you've created together that can't be. I've been in three bands, and
I'm in Bruiser in one now.
You and Bruiser are in a band.
He plays the drums, yeah.
Bruiser's a drummer?
Yeah, no, it's an in-joke. I'm hoping somebody hears that in the conference. Yeah.
Shit, can I be the singer?
The in-joke?
No, I'm not in.
Right, well, I'll tell you what.
I have visions. This has all been conducted on some road trip down to...
Well, I'll tell you what. Before we hear this band, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to hear this story, because I need to hear this. Dean... Alexander Dean.
In a band.
And Bruiser. The Ballymun Bruiser are in a band together.
Hit it, buddy. 1, 2, 3, 4.
We are back. Dean, obviously we had a great conversation there at the first part about your work, obviously, in ICW. One of the things I would like to talk to you about, obviously, is your work now on the Homelands. You're obviously still down with Fight Factory.
Yeah.
You're doing a lot of great work. You're training down there as well. You're not one of the coaches
anymore.
One of the coaches, okay. No. Well, you were.
Yeah, for a period.
Okay.
Then I got selfish and started focusing on myself.
As you should. Mm-hmm. But like for you now going forward, I guess there's only half a year, not even half a year left actually.
Mm-hmm.
For you, for the rest of 2019, And for, I guess, going into 2020, what is it that you wanna do?
I have a few things in mind. I'd like to get a little bit more established in ICW. I'd like to be a much more regular fixture there. I've really enjoyed the couple of times I've been over. I'd like to visit the UK a little bit more. I would eye up a couple of different promotions. I want to work for TNT. I definitely want to work for Progress. If at all possible, I'd like to work for somewhere like Rev Pro as well. There's a lot of great promotions.
Yeah, yeah. Especially in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
So many.
Making the trek out to Germany in October for WXW, and I'm in the Ambition tournament there. I would like to make that a regular thing if I could in any way parlay that into regular spots on their shows. I worked for WXW back in the day, and it was always a great experience. I can only imagine it's better now, given how much that company has grown. And yeah, that's about it, really. I want to keep doing some good work with Phoenix Wrestling over in Ireland, and I want to stay as busy as possible. I want to try and get to the UK as much as possible and over to Europe as much as I can.
Well, that's good. I mean, one of the things that I'm interested in seeing you do is kind of branching out into the American market, which is obviously eventually what you want to do.
Yeah, of course.
You want to do it. I mean, if you would be in the wrong business if you didn't want to, I guess.
Well, I was over for Mania weekend this year, and I was over on one previous occasion. Oh, sorry, add to that list of promotions. I'd like to work for Chikara again. I really like Chikara, and I'd like to do something with them in the near future, particularly with Mike Quackenbush, who's been a really big influence in my career. And here's a scoop for you. Mike Quackenbush is having 25 matches for his 25th anniversary in wrestling, and he's selected 25 opponents. And at some stage in the future, I will wrestle him, because we've had a dialogue about this, and he said, yep, let's do the dance at some stage. So I don't know where, I don't know when.
He's not doing it in the one night, I'm sure.
No. It's over the year. So at some stage in the next year, I will stare across the ring from Mike Quackenbush, and that will be a real kind of a dream come true, because I've always admired his work since the first time that I see him. So we've previously tried to hook it up. The weekend just gone. Schedules did not allow for it to happen. At some stage, I'm hoping by early 2020, that match will have happened.
And in terms of where you want to end up, like, do you see yourself trying to get into one of the major companies within the next year or two?
Yeah, I'd love to be a full-time professional wrestler.
AEW, WWE, I mean, the options are open for you now.
It seems like doors are open. Anywhere you choose to go. There's a lot of UK and Ireland-based talent in both. Obviously NXT, NXT UK, WWE.
TNA AEW. Could deal with an Irish competitor on the Fishing Channel.
But yeah, look, Rev Pro, New Japan, my inbox is always open.
TNA, if you're offering the right thing, do not shut it out.
They don't offer the right thing, that's the problem.
You want to wrestle Sami Callihan, yeah?
I like Sami Callihan. I think he's class, to be honest with you. I've heard stories about TNA offering really shite contracts, so I don't know. Never say never, but apparently what they offer people is not enough to live on. So
sure, yeah, I get you.
That was kind of tongue in cheek. That was more just to get a reaction out of you. But yeah, look, TNA, throw me a line. You know, we'll see if we can do some business. But yeah, seriously, NXT, give me a show.
I know the owner of Global Force. If you want me to throw a word in,
who's that, Jeff? Yeah. Hey, Jeff. Sure. We've crossed paths a few times.
No, in fairness, guys, we've actually had, like, the funny thing about this is you're going to get a condensed hour podcast. This has been like a 3-hour thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We had some funny. I got, apparently, I jobbed the guy out that I'm interviewing.
Oh, so jobbed me out. So wait, he goes on no, 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 hour,
let's no, 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 let's not job. No, hold I'm on. Not to help you.
Who's the guest here, right? He goes on this fucking hour rant where he's talking about dick flips and fucking comedy wrestling. And I was just like, me, didn't get a word in edgeways there. And he has a bit of a huff and he deletes the file. So here we are now.
Sorry, I brought it back.
Did you delete the file?
I brought it back.
He deleted the fucking file.
I try and keep my guests happy. Dean wanted it to be all about himself. Not much has changed since he was 15 years old.
Look, man, politics and time bomb, you know.
So, you know, I'm just waiting for him to go off, actually. Yeah, the politics and time bomb, and there's been no controversy, you know. So, obviously, he's matured.
But you haven't asked me the right question. You just started talking about dick flips.
who do you want me to ask you about?
It's grand. All right. I'm trying to be a good boy lately.
He is trying to be a good boy.
I have a very clean Twitter feed.
Yeah,
he deleted 5,000 tweets.
Dean, for anyone that, you know, listen to the show, used to be literally a politic and time bomb. Think CM Punk and multiply it by
politic, and here's my problem with the whole politic.
Well, you said it. Like, I don't think you were a politician. You were actually quite the opposite. And in fairness, I'm actually going to throw you a bone now.
Go on.
You were actually one of the most honourable guys back in the wrestling times. 100%. I remember a famous wrestler who won't be mentioned said something about me behind my back, and you were like, why don't you say it to his face? And legit, that got back to me, and you didn't even tell me that. Another source told me that and said, no, Dean straight up said, well, why are you pretending that you're his friend then? Why don't you just say it to his face? And he said it to him. This is a very, very fucking famous Irish wrestler that isn't Becky or
Finn Balor. I was going to make a joke. I was going to say, I almost punched the head off Becky that night.
Sorry. That isn't one of them. But no, but you've always been very, very fucking loyal and close to your friends. So, I mean, I think that ruffled a lot of feathers back in the day. Honesty in wrestling. What's the old saying? Tell a wrestler, telephone, telegram.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of wrestlers don't like honesty. You know what I mean? Old school wrestlers don't like honesty. It seems like it's different nowadays. They do.
The whole politicking thing, though, for me, always came down to the fact that I looked for work and I got it. And there was a percentage of people that could not fathom the fact that I was getting work that they weren't getting because they perceived themselves maybe to be more talented than I was. But I always thought of it as, if you don't ask, you don't get. I've got all the time in the world for the likes of MDH, because they're going out and killing it. And part of that is because they're amazing at wrestling.
Yeah.
But a big part of that is because,
where is LJ Cleary?
Where is LJ Cleary? But another major part of that is the fact that they're asking for the work. They're asking it. They're getting it because they're asking for it.
Yeah. It's no different than me and my podcast. People go to me.
How'd you get Magnum TA? I fucking asked them, didn't I?
How'd you get Harley Race? How did you get, you know, how did you get to be friends with Dynamite Kid's brother Mark, who you know, Marty Jones? Me and Mark are like that now, and have been for maybe 10 years, because I was always open to just opening these doors of communication. People used to say, oh, you're just, you know, you're creeping on Facebook or you're creeping on MySpace. No, you're opening doors of communication. Totally. That's what you do.
Totally.
It's different. You're not just adding these people for the sake of it.
You have an interest in people. And if those people are open to you having an interest, you're not doing anything wrong.
Exactly. Like, for example, I talked to Mark Billington there the other day, right? And it just came into my head. This is the kind of conversations we have. I was like, funny enough, I said, what the fuck? What music was your brother into? Because I had this idea in my head, I was listening to Journey.
Yeah.
Had this idea in my head that Dynamite Kid went around listening to Journey. And I asked him, and he goes, believe it or not, he was a Madonna fan. And he used to play her New Kids on the Block.
Brilliant.
And I was like, that is brilliant. That's another kind of line of, you think of Dynamite Kid as this big serious wrestler.
Mm.
And he'd play New Kids on the Block on the radio. And he wanted me to kind of say this, actually, on a podcast. He was like, let people know. And it's funny. I mean, you've obviously seen Dynamite's two nephews now.
Yeah, good lads.
Tom and Mark.
Tom. Very funny.
Tom is
the spin of him.
Tom is literally Dynamite.
Every bar wrestles like him.
Oh,
as well.
My God. The spit
he tombstoned him. Me.
He
I
did?
Wrestled him. Yeah, I wrestled him and his brother.
And he's shorter than me.
Yeah. I said it to Michael May. I said he knew we were wrestling the boys, and he's on the same show. And he goes, what are you doing? And I was like, they're very old school. We just went into the ring and wrestled, you know, but we had an idea at the finish.
Of course,
and Michael says, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I don't know. We're just gonna figure it out there." And he goes, "What do you have the finish?" And I said, "Yeah." I was like, "What's the finish?" Tom's gonna tombstone me, and then Mark's gonna hit me with the headbutt. And he was like, "You for real?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "It's a 16-year-old kid." I'm like, "Yeah."
I trust.
Like how? He goes, "He's not gonna get you up." And I was like, "Get me up just fine, you know." And we struggled a bit because I'm, at the time, 220 pounds.
Obviously. And now you're what, 240?
230-ish. Yeah.
It's 240 kayfabe, man. Bring kayfabe back. Hashtag bring kayfabe back. 250.
But, got me up there. Put my foot through the ceiling, low roof in the venue. But I remember Phil Powers was the ref. And he goes, fucking hell.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. Has this big reaction because, you know.
Sure. It's funny because I said to Mark, I told him, I said, listen, next time Dean is over with your boys, like, mention me to him. Like, yeah, Dean's a really good friend of mine. I don't know whether he ever did.
No. But, I haven't really spoke to Mark Senior that much now.
Yeah, first. Like, and he was like, oh, yeah, I'll mention it. And obviously the two boys I've been trying to get on the podcast for a while, but they were a bit they're really shy.
They're quiet, yeah.
Because I keep talking.
Very funny though. Mark especially is very funny.
Well, I keep talking to Tom, and Tom, like, he's the one I talk to most. Like, Mark talks a little bit, but his dad, Mark, me and him talk all the time. But Tom's like, oh, how are you doing, blah, blah, blah. And, like, Tom listens to the show all the time. He's like, oh, thanks for keeping mentioning me, uncle. Like, you know, they love that. And it's always something that I made a pact with Mark that every show, Dynamo Kid's name will come up.
Yeah.
And that's out of respect.
Yeah.
For me, as my favourite wrestler of all time, but also, you know, for them. Oh. And so it's good to talk. But it's great when I saw your head standing beside little Tom and all. I was like, Jesus, Dino and all is over
small
there.
World.
It
small
is.
World.
It is a small world. Like, and I mean, obviously, Marty's been on the show a lot. And
Marty's.
Who better to learn from than one of the greatest?
Every time you go over, you get like a couple of nuggets of information that make you look at wrestling in a totally different way. And
he just always gives me Sunday dinner tips.
Yeah, oh, he's a big laugh at Carver. Yeah. He's so entertaining as a person though. Like the stories you hear. He told me a great story when we were driving to Leeds before about his first trip to Mexico.
They
did a mask versus hair match with Pedro Aguayo.
Yeah.
Or as he called him, Pedro Aguayo.
Pedro Aguayo.
I'm in there, Pedro Aguayo.
Yeah, Pedro Aguayo, yeah.
And they put 30,000 in Arena Mexico anywhere for this match, and they said to him, it's okay if you shave your head. And he says, oh, depends what you pay me. And so he said, yep, best payday I've ever got in wrestling. And I said something like, paid me $9,000 for the match, and I came home and I bought a house, and that's how I bought my first house. It's so like hilarious. Like,
the best head shave he's ever fucking got, in fairness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but it's great to hear those kind of stories. Like, and like, that's the great thing about British wrestling to me, for me, will always be number one. I think because people can talk about Irish wrestling, but it's Irish wrestling is an extension of
Irish wrestling is a baby.
It is, like, and it's an extension of British wrestling, and it's
Irish wrestling that we know is a baby.
It is, because I mean, it started in 2001 when the two boys went over. No, but I mean, when the two boys, when Fergal and Paul went over and brought it over here.
Yeah, modern Irish wrestling, perhaps.
That's what I'm talking about.
Historically, Irish wrestling has.
Oh no, historically Irish wrestling. Yeah.
Let me tell you about Collar and Elbow, my friend.
Well, I'll talk. I'm
not
here
the tag team. Not the tag team.
I'm here to listen.
40,000 people once showed up to a field in County Kildare to watch two men settle a dispute in a collar and elbow bout. Do you know that? Do you know what collar and elbow is? No. Collar and elbow is a folk style of wrestling, where the objective was to get your opponent onto the ground by tripping him. So collar and elbow was a series of scuffles. It was actually called scuffling as well, where you grip your opponent by his collar, the sleeve of his jacket. The neck of his jacket.
And
the sleeve, the elbow. You would grab each other in something resembling a collar and elbow tie up, and you would kick the fucking shins off each other to try and get each other down to the ground. So if you ever wonder why I do that slightly fashionable shin kick in my matches, where I kick somebody in the shin.
It's a homage.
And then I suplex them or whatever I do afterwards. It's an homage to old.
Well, I will tell you something as well that you probably do know. Do you know that Irish wrestling, wrestling in general, professional wrestling generally started in Irish circuses anyway?
Did it?
Yes, it did.
Oh, Irish circuses in the US?
No, in Ireland. Oh. It started in Ireland. Yeah, that's a true story. I have a book at home. It's one of my most cherished possessions. Based on the history of professional wrestling. I didn't know that, and I'm actually really glad that you told me that story, because I love knowledge when it comes to that kind of thing. But yeah, that was the whole thing. They would have the two guys, they were in on it, they would challenge the local tough guy, the local tough guy was in on it, everyone would be going, yeah, fucking sort him out. No one was ever smart enough to realise that the local tough guy was never a local. It was a guy travelling everywhere. But that was it. That was where the whole kayfabe came from. That was where carny came from. Mm-hmm. Where all the words, the carny words came from as well. You know what I mean? that they would, you know. Do you ever hear someone speak proper carny?
Ah, yeah.
It's a lost art, but it's great to hear it. Like, it, I mean, let's not be fake here. Like, not all of us know how to speak it, but it's great when you hear the likes of Jim Cornette and all talk about, you know, how they would actually, you know, converse in that language. But yeah, wrestling started in Ireland. And that's what they brought it to the United States. That's where the circuses kind of came from, and they'd have the local tough guy attraction outside, make it look legit. And yeah, because obviously boxing was big business back then, whereas wrestling looked like more of a legitimate scuffle, you know, because not everyone was able to get in and box each other, but people were able to go in and scuffle on the ground and try and choke each other out and try and get a pinfall. And yeah, it was loosely based on the Greco-Roman, obviously, form of wrestling where they would try and get them down for a pin. But there we are. That's our little Dean and Ian's guide to history on this podcast. But back to yourself, Dean. What have you got coming up over the next couple of weeks that people can look forward to? Obviously, people should pay attention to your Twitter and to your Instagram handles, because that's where a lot of your promos...
Rather be Dean.
Yep.
What have I got coming up? I've got ICW in the Garage in Glasgow, August 25th. I have a rematch with Ricky Knight Jr. I beat him at Shug's house party.
Is he a geezer?
Nah, he's only a kid.
He's a proper geezer.
Nah, he's a little young boy. I'll bash him around.
You're going to bash him around? Yeah, I'm going to have to tell Ricky now this.
Send it to Ricky and Julia. I'll bash the lad around.
But look, they're obviously going to have something to say in return. Like, you got me in the middle here.
Couldn't give a shit.
No?
Why do they care?
So you're going to smack him around?
Yeah. Did it before. He got a few licks in last time, but bash a little...
That's about
young
it.
...young boy around the place, you know what I mean? Might bring my kendo stick. Give him a thrashing.
Hurley stick.
No. It's a bit too...
That's old school,
it's cultural misappropriation, isn't
I'm
it?
Sorry, listen, Julia. Don't blame me.
I won't hurt him too badly.
I'm out of the business, so I can't say much or do much. He's bigger than me these days.
August 25th, that's what I've got. Garage in Glasgow. There's some other stuff in the UK that might be in the pipeline, and there's some stuff in Germany that might be in the pipeline, but none's been announced yet, so I can't really go talking about it. What has been announced is WXW Ambition, which is a hybrid wrestling tournament, no pinfalls, submissions and knockouts. That is on October 5th, the weekend of the World Tag Team Festival.
And
I might also be in WXW for another match that weekend. Can't say no. And then yeah, that's I've got as far as I'm aware, I've got a few ICWs coming up, and then Phoenix are in a bit of a venue crisis with the Keno potentially not working, not closing down, or not being open for business. So we'll see what happens there. But the Resurgents are wreaking havoc there, both as a wrestling troupe and a wedding band.
Okay.
That was in the deleted part.
No, part one. You're all good.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for season two.
The explanation was in part two.
If we one day we will have a whole podcast of the lost tapes with Ian and Dean, and it will be.
They're lost now.
I'll be shut off the air. They're somewhere. They're in the cloud somewhere, and some cunt is gonna get
them. They're gone. Got rid of
that
little strop.
But it wasn't a strop. It was out of respect. No, because I felt bad.
There could have been an edit job done on that.
Listen, I felt bad. Because you did say that I
jobbed
you. And yeah.
And what did Blue Meanie there, job squad.
And what did I do?
Had a strop. Look around.
Not as much as the strop I'm about to have.
The whole thing.
Nah, it's alright, mate. I'm feeling fresh. I'm still in the water. I haven't bitten onto that hook yet. No, listen, I'm actually going to have a bit of fun with this, alright? We're going to do a little round robin thing, alright? Three different. Of course it does, yeah. Of course. So,
2%.
Going to do. No, plenty of percent. So, what we're going to do, I'm going to do a quick fire round on. Five wrestlers from the history of time.
Oh, there we go.
And I just want you to, in a couple of words, not don't go into it, your thoughts on them, okay?
All right.
We're going to start with Macho Man Randy Savage.
Planner. It's not one word, is it?
No, you can have a few words, yeah.
Macho Man Randy Savage. Extremely charismatic, a bit of an innovator. Don't ask me about 80s, lads. I'm not a huge 80s buff.
CM Punk.
CM Punk. I think it's a shame that he stepped away when he did. I understand why he did, because we've all kind of been there when you're banging your head up against the wall and you're a bit frustrated. Ultimately, he's probably at this stage, he's probably...
On the way back?
No. Yeah, he could be on the way back. But
it looks like
think,
it, doesn't it?
Ultimately, I think his comeback will not mean as much of it as if he had it done it 3 years ago.
Okay. Boom. Let's talk
also,
about...
Also, CM Punk on the indies. I think he made a hell of a career. I look up to him because I would consider myself slightly limited as a athletic professional wrestler. I don't do things that are overly flashy or... amazingly athletic. I'm not Ricochet, and I think CM Punk falls in the same bracket. He tells great stories, he works good matches, he whips up great emotion in anything that he's done over the years, and he does that without being a extremely talented or gifted physical storyteller.
Okay.
Sorry, he is a physical storyteller, but he does this by not being the most physically extravagant man in the world.
Okay. Chris Jericho.
Chris Jericho.
See, I'm giving you guys that you know.
Just don't want to say about Chris Jericho.
I know he's one of your favourites.
His goth dad thing is poxy, isn't it? I hate it. Stick to your... What did Zach say about
he's
him?
He's got a dad bod now,
stay on your, stay in your boat playing your dad rock, mate. You know? Yeah. And I strongly agree. Stay out of Zack Sabre's business. Chris Jericho, I'm finding it hard to get along with his goth dad stuff, to be honest with you. I think his best stuff in the last few years has been The List, and I
still better than the dick flip.
I admire his dedication to reinventing himself, but I'm not a huge fan of what he's done
okay.
the last year.
Okay,
so.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Some people like it, some people don't.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what to think either.
Yeah.
But look, the guy's had an amazing career, and he's still relevant.
He
so it's crazy.
Yeah.
Right, last two.
Yeah.
Hangman Page. I'm interested to hear what you
don't
think of this
about
one. You don't know anything about Hangman Page?
I don't know anything about him.
Okay, well, we'll replace Hangman Page with another one of your old school favourites.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Styles.
Was he an old school favourite?
Yeah, like, you were a fan of the old new school, and he would have been one of
the
innovators
X Division.
Of that.
Yeah,
I
love that X Division shit back in the day.
What do you think, okay, this is a better way of saying it, what do you think of his transition into WWE?
I
mean,
it's amazing.
It's been
I think it's been unreal.
Legit been phenomenal.
Yeah, phenomenal,
yeah,
but
yeah.
Like, without being fantastic.
No pun intended.
Amazing.
Yeah.
What you say about AJ Styles that hasn't already been said, he's fucking unreal. He walked into WWE as a, shall we say, slightly undersized guy with a reputation built on the indies, TNA, and New Japan, a lot of people asking the question of can he do it in
the big league
or not.
Yeah.
And I think by the time you wrestled John Cena at SummerSlam, everyone knew, oh fuck, he can. He can. And the fact that he became like the franchise, the WWE champion for as long as he was, like the guy that they put the companies back on for a while, is a testament to how good he really is. And to do it all at like, what's he, 42 now? Something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah.
Like 42 years of age. That's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Phenomenal,
some would say. And like, when Ric Flair was 42, they were always playing off the fact that, like, oh, he's so old and he's like, he's this relic or whatever of the past. No one has ever mentioned that about AJ Styles. Nobody
yeah,
called AJ Styles the past. And I don't know if it's because he's only debuted in the last 5 years, in 3 years in WWE, or if it's just a facet of the fact that he still wrestles like a 20-year-old, you know?
And then lastly, just off the top of my head, Finn Balor.
Finn Balor? I don't know. I don't want to say about Finn Balor. Obviously, big inspiration for a lot of Irish guys. Because he's like the one guy that kind of made it on his own terms, you know? When everybody wanted to create divides in Irish wrestling, there was always that Fergal or Sheamus kind of thing. Or are you the wrestler's wrestler or are you like the Sheamus guy? I think they've come a lot closer in recent years with Sheamus becoming an absolute workhorse and an amazingly well-rounded big guy pro wrestler. And Fergal making the transition to WWE and being the, you know, being a bit of a franchise player there. Ultimately, I think WWE could have done a lot more with him, but it's hard to do an awful lot when that injury happened, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they could have brought him back to a mega push when his shoulder healed up, but chose not to. And I can see why they did that. Like, I think the pop was in him winning the belt in his first big match, you know?
Fair enough. We'll get on to another quickfire round. As in, I'm going to ask you now, three people that you want to work with in the next year.
Yeah.
So, give me three people. that are in the world of wrestling that you want to work.
I've given you two of them already. Terry Thatcher. Yeah. Oh, that was in the last. That was in the last tape.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm well aware.
All right, Terry Thatcher. I've known the lad since 2006, which is now 13 years. I have never once locked up with him on a show in any way, shape, or form.
Okay.
I have tagged with him once when he was the Irish Dragon and I was Sean South, and that was in 2006. Other than that, we've had no interaction at all on shows.
So Terry Thatcher's one.
I think that's criminal. Okay. Another one that I also gave you earlier on, the Lost Tapes, Valkyrie. Mm-hmm. Mostly just because, like, she's definitely the future. I don't have a solid history of intergender.
She's unreal, man.
She's actually class. Unreal. She's unfucking real. I haven't got that many intergender matches underneath my belt. And I think if I was going to have one with any of the girls in Ireland or anywhere right now, Valkyrie is top of the list. She's absolutely class at what she does. And I would really like to have that match. And a third one. Oh, who have I not wrestled? See, this is the thing I said to you earlier on. I've wrestled almost everybody in Ireland at this stage. It's hard to think. Do they have to be first-time matches, or do they...
No, it can be anyone. You'd love to wrestle again, even, yeah?
Do you know what? I'd love to wrestle Leighton Buzzard in ICW. Leighton Buzzard is absolutely class, and I'd love to have a match with him. The lad just gets it. And if at some stage we could hook that up, I'd be absolutely delighted.
Okay. And then, I guess, to finish the show...
Yep.
I'd like you to kind of go in and remind fans again what we did at the start of the next show in Trinity.
The next show in Trinity, August 16th, maybe 17th. We're doing Trinity Brawl 2, Dublin or nothing.
Hashtag Dublin or nothing.
Hashtag
trending Dublin. On Twitter right now.
Use them hashtags. Hashtag August 16th, hashtag Trinity Brawl, hashtag Dublin or nothing. We're probably going to do two shows if I have my way. Also, if I have my way, I may or may not wrestle Valkyrie on one of them. There's some mad shit being planned. There's some special guests involved in the project this year. Some people that J Money has called in favours from the outside to be involved with this. I can't say much because I think the idea is to give fans a big surprise. Have them leave the wrestling show and think... was that a wrestling show? So I don't want to give too much away because we haven't really sat down and talked about the marketing for this just yet.
Jim Cornette is not going to be involved, just to let people know.
I would fucking love if he was. I'd have him, if we do a second night, I'd have him book the second night, to be honest with you.
Take a dick flip.
He'd probably going around smacking people with tennis rackets.
Could you do, I've always thought, could Jay Money do a booty flip, you know? He puts a dollar bill up his arse and you try and grab it and then he flips you with it. I think we'll explore that in Trinity Brawl.
Well, if time allows it, I'm going to be there to interview people again. Fuck it.
Yeah,
do it. And it's going to be like much...
Asking all the hard questions.
Asking all the hard
questions. Why did you do a dick flip?
Yeah, that will be one of the main questions if I see that. I'm looking at you, Kieran. I think you...
Oh, no. I've got something way worse than dick flip.
You've that look in your eyes.
I'm
going to
leave that alone.
What if Eno got in and took a dick flip?
Are you?
Imagine me getting him taking a dick flip. Yeah, no, it's never going to happen.
I was just going to throw some matches that make you lose the right.
What would it be?
I was just going to say, we were not going to let fans in the ring, pal.
The
rage in his eyes. And on that note...
It's
on,
grand.
On that note, they don't want the real way. Workers at their show. so, fairness, well played. They don't want real workers at the show. That's fine. It's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. If you all want to jump in the ring... you're more than welcome, Dean, is that right?
Yeah, totally.
No, in fairness, that was
badass as a kick the
that,
shit out of
that was well played. That was well played. Well played. No, I'm looking forward to it, all joking aside. I think I'll be there for sure. As I said, if time allows it, I'll definitely be there and do what we've done the last time.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was great fun. And guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. An absolute pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine.
And thank you for sharing a lot of stories. I mean, finally we got around to it this time. It's legit. This podcast has happened, okay? Don't wake up and think that it didn't. It did happen for the third time. We made it happen, and we still had Lost Tapes, even in this episode. Yeah, so it's been a battle within the battle. But no, guys, 100%. Thank you podcast so much. Session. Absolutely pleasure. And Kieran, thanks for chiming in as well, sir. I appreciate it. Guys... all that I have to say is Dynamo, over and out. Ah, that's all good. That can
be. Yeah, we can end.